Birth, the Grand Division, Chapter 23. Lorraine awakened before dawn, with her eyes getting used to the quiet surroundings of her room in the White House. The canopy over the bed was beautifully handmade and carefully stretched over the cherry wood bed. The faint light coming through the curtains over the window beside the bed revealed the folds and careful stitching in the fabric. She rolled her head to the side and noticed the time was just after 3:30 a.m. on the digital clock, somehow out of place in this early American decor. She rose and walked to her bathroom and freshened her face and took a drink of water. It was time to try out the large sitting cushions she had purchased the night before with Sarah on their pleasant shopping trip. She was a good girl with a strong sense of patriotism that drew her to Washington to be an intern. She felt a desire to make sure this girl was protected from the debauchery that seemed to ooze through this city like a dark fog. She sat cross-legged on one of the cushions and placed her hands on her knees and tried to maintain the pre-dawn calm in her mind and form her thoughts for her calling to organize the president's activities and become the gatekeeper for his attention. She felt alone, but strangely as though she was in the right place in her life. An hour passed with peace and tranquility washing over her. At once, as though an appointment had come due, she opened her eyes and rose to shower and dress for her first day of duties with President Riker. By 6 o'clock, she was headed down the hall to the diet kitchen on the same floor to get some breakfast. The hall was already well lit, and she noticed a white light coming from the tiny kitchen that had served so many guests in that historic building since the house was rebuilt after the Revolutionary War fire on August 24, 1814. She walked into the small kitchen to meet a small man dressed in a white chef's outfit. "Good morning to you," she said in her smooth voice. "Oh, good morning, Miss McKenna," said the chef. "Lorraine will be fine," she said. "Food is a familiar activity, if that's all right with you." "I'm so delighted to prepare whatever you like," he said with a broad smile on his face. "Coffee is brewing, and I have some muffins coming out of the oven in just a few minutes. Please have a seat here at our small table, and I will join you, Lorraine." They smelled divine, and coffee would be magnificent, and she held out her hand to shake his. His grip was as gentle as his light touch on the handmade dough that was baking in the modern oven beside them. "Tell me a little about yourself," she said, sliding her hand from his and taking a seat on the early American wooden chair at the perfect little table. "I am Chef Martin Bailey. I've been cooking here at the White House for nearly 20 years, and it has been a most enjoyable experience. We have had so few guests since President Riker was elected that I was wondering if I would retire this year. But now that you are here, I think I will stay," he said, tipping the oven door open slightly to check on the small pan of muffins. "Would you like some eggs or some bacon? The muffins and coffee sound just perfect, Martin. May I help you in any way?" "Oh, no, that would be my pleasure to serve you," he said as he placed a beautiful white cup and saucer with a small silver spoon in front of her. He poured the coffee and placed the pot back onto the brewer. "Cream and sugar?" he asked. "I think the sweetness of your muffins will do just fine this morning," she said with a smile. "I can tell already that your love for your work will be all the nourishment I need to start my first day on the job." "Feeling a little nervous?" he asked. "Well, now that you mention it," she chuckled slightly. "Well, think nothing of it. Mine will go away when I hear your compliment about my recipe," he said. "Not everything will go away, you know," she said calmly. "Miss Lorraine, I can't imagine a heaven where food will not be enjoyed," he said as he leaned back on his hands against the granite countertop behind him. "I too believe that is true, Martin. Whatever we do in love will perpetuate forever," she said from memory of her own workshops on the purpose of life. "And you love to cook." "Yes, I really do. It gives me joy to see people enjoy what I have made with my hands, he said, stepping forward again to check on the muffins. Ah, I think they are just about perfect. He opened the white upper cabinet with glass-paned doors and picked a white china plate from the stack without making a sound. He placed it in front of her, along with a tiny china cup with a hand-swirled portion of butter inside. He opened the oven and turned the controls off. He slipped his soft hand into a mitten and retrieved the pan to a wooden cutting board on the granite counter. With his free hand, he opened a drawer and, with a small pair of tongs, picked a muffin from the pan and placed it on her plate. He placed a small butter knife and a fork next to the plate. "This smells amazing," she said, dividing the muffin and spreading the butter on both halves. She took a sip of the coffee while the butter melted into the fresh muffin. "Mmm, this coffee is spectacular," and she used the fork to cut a piece of muffin and put it into her mouth. "Oh my, this is the best muffin of my life," she said, trying her best not to talk with her mouth full. Chef Martin smiled as he placed the other 5 muffins on the wooden cutting board and closed the oven door. "There's more where that came from, if you wish." "You have a place here as long as I am," she said, and they quietly enjoyed the moment in the silence of the Diet Kitchen on the 3rd floor of the White House. "Will you be taking lunch here as well?" he asked. "I should never like to leave this floor again," she said, "but I am sure the President will have other things for my plate today." "I know what you mean, Lorraine," he said. "I will be here for breakfast again tomorrow. Now, I have been known to like something light around midnight," she said with a smile as she sipped her coffee and finished her muffin. "Perhaps some fruit and a pastry?" he asked. "You read my mind." "Well, just dial this number any time, night or day," he said, pointing to the folded card in the front of the fresh flower arrangement in the center of the small table, "and I will be happy to prepare whatever you like." "It's a date," she said, as she again extended her hand to shake his. He helped her up from the table, and she walked out of the kitchen and headed for her room to make sure her appearance was good for the day. Within a few minutes, she was down the elevator and walking for the Oval Office to meet with President Riker. She saw Hadid enter the Oval Office as she turned the corner and lengthened her stride. "Good morning, Mr. President," she said, entering the office and placing her small satchel on the love seat just inside the door. "Good morning, Lorraine," he said. "Are you ready to get started?" "Yes, sir," she said with an open smile. "Mr. President, before we begin the day, I have received a message that it is time for the next announcement," said Hadid as he stood with his back to the wall beside the nearly floor-length painting hung on the creamy pastel wall. "An announcement? Do I already know these words?" he asked. "You make them your own, but I have a theme for the message. In the vault," he said. "Who gets to hear these words?" he asked. "Everyone," he said deeply and quietly. "Wait, what is the nature of this announcement?" asked Lorraine. Hadid stood silently, looking at Riker for his leadership. His hands were to his side, his face was calm with unblinking eyes. "Have Margaret hold calls for an hour," he said, pointing to Hadid. "Can we make the connection from here?" asked Riker. "We can connect to Site R at the Emergency Alert System Broadcast Center directly through a secure link," said Hadid, as he gently opened the bulletproof door to the Oval Office and leaned out to give the directions to Margaret. Riker looked at Lorraine, who sat down on the love seat next to her satchel. "I need you to help me," he said, looking at her. "Are we ready?" "Yes, sir," she said, unsure of whether or not she was, and for what, she had no idea. Riker stood from behind the presidential desk and moved toward Hadid, who had already opened the opposite door to the Oval Office for the two to exit. Lorraine stood and walked next to Riker as the three moved with long steps down the hall. They passed the doorway leading to the president's private quarters to the end of the hall. Hadid took out his magnetic card and held it up to the wall in a certain spot. There was an audible clunk, and the wall moved in slightly. He pushed it open, and the three entered the declining passageway to the elevator. He gently pushed the door secure, and it locked behind them. Within minutes, they were down in the secure sitting room of the vault, hundreds of feet below the White House. Hadid went to the kitchen through the arched hallway to prepare coffee. Lorraine took a seat close to Riker and leaned forward to speak to him. "I had a dream," she began. "So did I," he said, uncrossing his legs and also leaning forward. "You go ahead," she said. "No, you. I want to hear what you dreamed." Hadid said, "These are important," he almost whispered. "Oh, you have no idea, Mr. President," she said, thinning her eyes and using her hands like opening a book before her. "You are both receiving dreams," said Hadid, standing in the archway with the tray with the two cups and a small china pot. "You startled me," said Lorraine. "Sorry, ma'am," he said. "Before you get started sharing your dreams with one another, I have here the theme from the ancient record," he said as he placed the tray on the coffee table and turned toward the bookcase. He selected a large bronze-colored book and placed it next to the coffee tray. "What book is that?" asked Lorraine. "Well, it isn't scripture, if that's what you're thinking. It is a book of prophecies about the union of the polarity. It explains how the earth was put together and when and how it will come apart at the end of the age." He opened the book and thumbed through until he got to a page with a hand-drawn graphic of the two earths separating. "It's called the Grand Division." "I know of this Grand Division," she said. "I always thought it had to do with the dividing of good from evil in the last days." "That, and much more," he said. "The two seeds of Eve have matured and have developed into different ideologies. One is complacent and focused on accumulating wealth and opulence for their old age. The other is full of rage, fueled by millennia of jealousy and a team of ancient angels, many of whom are still functioning on Earth today. They are dedicated to jihad and the subservience of all mankind to their battle-hardened mentality. When they become fully separated, they will go to war with one another. The army has prepared for generations for this war. The other has grown fat and lazy and self-destructive." "Well, that pretty much describes 21st century Earth," said Riker. "Your election was prophesied. Let's see, right here," he said, pointing to a passage in the book. "And it shall come to pass that a leader will be elected by the people who is not from the order of the judges or the priests. He shall strike fear in the hearts of the wicked, for they will have no bands upon him, and his words shall shake the very pillars of hell," read Hadid. "That is you, Mr. President. We didn't know where or when this leader would come, because all world leaders are groomed and swear their allegiance to the order of judges or the priests. You are an outsider." "I noticed that too," said Lorraine. "I don't watch the news, but it seemed there was a mass confusion as to how this could have happened. I'm surprised that no one has tried to stop you," she said. Riker looked at Hadid for a second and leaned to have a closer look at the book. "What is this here?" he asked as he pointed to a large golden image on the next page. "Is that a tree?" "No, Mr. President. It's an explosion," said Lorraine with tears nearly coming out of her eyes. "It's a prophecy about a battle in a war where one of the gods dies," said Hadid vacantly. "It was in my dream," she said, barely able to get the words out. "The bright flash and the rolling together of heaven. See here, these lines are the shock waves that destroy everything for miles. Mr. President, this is a nuclear blast. Actually, there are two of them at the same time." "What does it say? Who does this?" asked Riker. "We don't exactly know," said Hadid. "Here is what it says. And on the great and terrible day of the Lord, the finger of God shall slay the god of the moon and the star, which was made by the hands of the Dark Prince. And it shall come to pass that the Lord shall send fire exceeding the brightness of the sun, and the god of the moon and the star made by the hands of the dark prince shall be destroyed, and the fall will be mighty thereof. And there shall be weeping and wailing, and the followers of the dead god shall wander to and fro to pray, but their black stone idol will be no more, and they shall lose their way to heaven. It sounds like a pair of nuclear blasts, but the rest of that makes no sense. How do we stop something like that? He said. You cannot, said Hadid. But all those people die, said Lorraine. They are already dead, said Hadid. You mean it already happened? Asked Riker. No. I mean the followers of the god of the moon and star are already dead. Their souls are lost. What does that mean? How can living people be dead? Who is the god of the moon and star? What is the black stone? Asked Riker in a flurry of thoughts, his mind clouding with the memory of his dream of the cracked and gray wasteland. It's Islam, said Lorraine distantly. The crescent moon and the star are their symbols. I was thinking Gnostic, but it is Islam. I feel that they are referring to Mecca. It is Mecca, Mr. President, said Hadid as he stood to pour some more coffee into the cups from which they had been sipping. He carefully placed the china pot back onto the tray without making a sound. They're going to nuke Mecca? Who's going to nuke Mecca? Asked Riker, rubbing his forehead with the impact this might have on the world. And how does a god die? Asked Riker. Well, I have that part, said Lorraine. Allah does not really exist. It is a type and a shadow invented by Muhammad in the 7th century. It was a religious boom time on earth. Confucius, Muhammad, the Mormons, the Zapotecs, Tibetan Buddhism, and a dozen Native American traditions all started at the same time. It's just that Muhammad spread his religion with the sword. You see, if Mecca is destroyed, the people will know that Allah is fake because he was unable to protect their holiest city. Lorraine stood up and began using her hands to speak now. If the black stone, which they revere in Mecca as a stone sent by God to guide Adam and Eve, is destroyed, then they have no focal point. They lie down and pray to Mecca. If the stone is gone, there is no focal point for their conscious energy. If Mecca is radioactive for the next 2 decades, then pilgrimages stop entirely, removing an essential element of their salvation. Muslims cannot reach heaven without making a pilgrimage to Mecca once in their lives. The entire religion, with over 1 billion followers, will be unable to get to heaven. They will wander to and fro without a place to go. Yeah, the question is, what will they do then? Take revenge? Asked Riker. It is not in the prophecy, Mr. President, said Hadid. Well, what is? He asked, frustrated. It goes on to say the words that the outside leader will use to heal the world before the grand division is complete. And it shall come to pass that before the great and terrible day of the Lord, that the ruler will send words to all the land, and his voice shall reach every kindred tongue and people. And his words shall divide the wheat from the tares, and the tares shall be gathered together in their place, and the wheat shall be gathered together in its place. And his words shall be coals upon the heads of the one and sweet savor to the other. And it shall come to pass that all across the land, the inhabitants of the villages and cities shall wage war between the light and the darkness. Nevertheless, his words shall heal the land, and the dark prince shall fail in his mission to enslave the entire earth. So how do I make this speech? Asked Riker. The words will come to you, but you may want to write them down to make it sound smoother on the radio. Besides, it gives something to the translator so they can spread the word as well, said Hadid. I can help you, Mr. President. Shall we get started? Said Lorraine. Everything we do is today, as a friend of mine told me once, he said. Take your time, Mr. President. We still have a half an hour, said Hadid, smiling and picking up the coffee tray. The speech flowed out like it was scripted from heaven. There were very few edits that had to be made. Hadid set up the secure line and Riker read the speech into the Emergency Alert System archive. It would be scheduled by computer to air globally at the same time. It would repeat 3 times over all available networks, cell phone notification systems, and social media.